We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, friends. This episode of Big Blue Banter is brought to you by Prize Picks. Head on over to Prize Picks and use promo code BANTER and they'll match up to $100 on a new deposit. Thank you and enjoy.
Welcome back. It's the Big Blue Banter, New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always my co-host Nick Velotto. It's been a while since we did a podcast here, Nick. Nick and I have both been on vacations. Mine is actually extending through the end of this weekend, sort of, but I'll be working from work and play type of little thing here. But I am just fresh off a flight from out of the country. Literally just got through customs, got inside the hotel room door, and hopped on the computer. That's how much I care. That's how much we care about this podcast. And we didn't want to take off too much more than just a week, but everyone deserves a vacation. So I'm happy Nick got some time off. I'm happy I got some time off. And obviously March is going to be a busy month for us. April's going to be an even busier month for us. So we needed a little calm before the storm here. And just a little reminder for the next week of shows, we'll be doing a bunch of content. We're going to be doing a multi-part mailbag. I know some people said you want us to keep it shorter, so we're just going to break it up into parts. We're also going to continue with our series and any news on the Giants as well. Now I'm back in the country, so I'll be able to kind of record whenever. Wasn't able to then. But in addition to that, I wasn't able to bring my whole mic setup and the mixer and everything to Florida and Costa Rica with me, my whole trip out here. So I'm just recording from the Apple mic, and so my sound's going to be definitely worse and off and different than Nick's. I know some people asked about, one person asked about the sound, but then I followed up with that person. They said, oh, I hadn't listened to the podcast since September. And that's when we got the sound and the mic and the mixer, or when I got it, I should say. And they said, I just listened to a new episode and it does sound great. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. Unfortunately, now you've started re-listening to us and you're going to have to deal with this mic for a little while. This is the Apple computer MacBook mic. So you may think, oh, was he just kind of tricking me? Was Dan just tricking me and putting a fake episode out there and make it look like he's improved his mic sound? But no, rest assured, the mic will return once I return back to New Jersey.
And that's, did you really just open the show just for this one guy explaining? Went on like 45 seconds just to explain to this one listener why you might not have the most crisp mic right now.
Yes, I needed to be clear that I will have a good mic very soon, but not for another week. But mailbag shows are my favorite. Nick, before we get into it, because once you get into it, you just get rolling with it. I want to know how you're doing and how your little break off was.
Yeah, it was good, man. I went down to Fredericksburg, Virginia with a bunch of friends toward the battlefield, just like we did last year with Antietam. And I love this Civil War history and things of that nature, and just reconnecting with some of my boys. So that was good. And then we went to DC and now I'm home.
Good. Glad to hear it. And glad you're back. I actually don't know why. I thought you also were visiting Diana. Going down there, was that not part of the
no
time? Okay, well, I will get going then, Nick, and let's get rolling on this mailbag. We got a bunch of questions in. Again, we're going to break this up into multiple parts. We're going to start with Frank Corona, our boy Corona AF257, who asks us, what are your guys' early thoughts on JJ McCarthy? Do you think he has the necessary traits that a Brian Daboll offense, I would assume you mean, can turn into a franchise quarterback? Also, what is both of your go-to hangover food? Nice.
All right, Dan. So I think you're probably more tailored to answer both of these questions right here. I don't really have a go-to hangover food. And as for JJ McCarthy, from what I've seen, a very good athlete, somebody who I've seen make some very impressive throws, but I haven't necessarily broken down the Michigan tape as much as I want to. quite yet. I am saving a lot of these guys for April because that's going to be the month where we really dive into the quarterback prospects. JJ, I've seen you tweet about him, so I think this is probably best for you to take this answer. And also, I am curious to know what your hangover food is.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of JJ yet. I recently was tweeting about him. I was talking to somebody who asked me a bunch about quarterbacks, and I was like, look, I just started watching some games on him right before I left for this trip. I watched two games, but I still not nearly as much as I've seen of May or Williams. But I will say when it comes to traits, I'm not so sure how much I will need to see to have my feelings on that. I mean, the more I see, the more I can get like, oh, he made that tight window throw, or he was able to anticipate where this receiver is going to be. And you'll see that as you go through more tape, or you'll see the opposite of it. Like, oh shit, he, you know, didn't process this fast enough and look at where the ball came out. I think his traits are pretty underrated though, from an on talent standpoint. I think I've seen him make some throws that are just like, wow, that's an impressive throw outside the numbers with good velocity and good ball placement. And I don't think he often gets that billing. I think as I go through my initial take, Nick, and obviously Frank, on McCarthy, my concerns are less with arm talent and things of that nature and more with just his overall frame. I know a lot of people discuss that he can grow into his frame, Nick, and that he's going to, you know, not be what he is now. And it's generally that discussion, Nick, is based on the fact that he's so young. And I understand that, but I don't think that's a given or a guarantee. And you've kind of turned me on to this, but I do sometimes worry about these types of frame quarterbacks. Now, let's take a look at what he's listed at, because
I think he's like 205, man. Like, I think it's pretty freaking small.
That's just listed too. And that's by Michigan. 6'3", they list him at 203. I would imagine he's not that big yet, just from how he looks on tape and based on what we know about teams and colleges overstating height and weight. I would also bet that when we get to the combine, he might be like 6'2", 6'2 and a half, but these are just guesses. But if he's 6'2", like 196, it starts to scare me. You start to see a lot of these, you know, you turn me on to Bryce Young, a prospect who I liked his anticipatory throwing, some of what I saw on tape at Bama. And, you know, I haven't obviously liked some of the tape I've seen at the NFL level and just the broadcast I've seen of him. So I'm a little concerned more about his frame, Nick, than I am about his arm talent. But I also don't feel like – so people are, like, talking up McCarthy, like, oh, shit, he's got that kind of next-level arm talent. When I look at this class, like, I don't really personally think that next-level arm talent is really there, in my opinion, for anyone but the big two. And you could throw in Milton, I guess, but, like, I don't really agree with the Milton takes. Like, Milton has strong arm strength, but, like, you'll watch him miss a throw in the flat where he can't change his arm slot, Milton, the kid from Tennessee, and you're like, eh, that doesn't look it. But when I watch May – and when I watch Caleb, that to me is like that next level of arm talent. And I think McCarthy's intrigued me, Nick, because he's like not at that tier, but he's on a next tier. And if you're at the next tier and you also have a lot of other traits that we like, that's when I can start to get excited. And, you know, even to an extent, like when we first drafted Jones, I was excited, even though I didn't even, like, to me, McCarthy has clearly better arm talent than Jones. I was never a real believer in Jones' arm talent. I've always found it overstated by fans. And I guess I don't really know why, but, you know, maybe because they want it to work. But I think he's above level from that. But I was a little excited about Jones in the sense that, like, maybe he can be this amazing processing quarterback coming from Duke, learning from Cutcliffe. I loved his upper body arm mechanics. Those are the things I'm going to want to focus on more, Nick, as I go through more McCarthy tape, his mechanics, both upper body and lower half, because that's something I haven't really studied yet. And if all those other things start to click for me, Nick, that's when I'll get excited. But as far as arm talent goes, I don't really feel it's on that elite level, personally.
I know Monty and Sal, they're fans of J.J. McCarthy, and they have a podcast called He's a Giant, I believe is what it's called. I encourage a lot of people to go and listen to them, and Sal actually is next up, and he asks...
Oh, wait, I got to get my hangover food. You know I have it.
Oh, okay. Well, that was such a seamless transition, though. So I'm going to say this one thing because it has there's no substance to the answer that we're going to provide. Sal just wants us to say, I dare you to say, Nick, RBBC three times in a row to Dan with a straight face. We're not going to do it, but I think Dan might crack a smile a little bit.
Yeah, you got one there, Sal. As far as favorite hangover food, for me, it's a classic everything bagel, Taylor ham, egg and cheese. That's the one for me. I mean, it's the one that gets me through everything. It's got everything I need. It's got the grease. It's got the egg for sustenance, and it's got the bread to soak up all that horrible, horrible stuff you put in your body. And I just came off a really, really bad weekend of treating my body. So in ways that are just beyond comprehension to me at this stage of my life. I haven't partied like that since I was like 20 something years old. So it took a toll on me. Somehow I'm able to do this pod right now. I'm like fading with energy, Nick, but this is rejuvenating me because I've been wanting to talk ball with you for a little while now. We've had such a break. So we'll get to the next one here. And this one is from Robert, 35, Robert 16. If the Giants walk out of free agency and the draft without legit competition for Daniel Jones at quarterback, how soon is it too soon to start looking at the top five of the 2025 draft?
I would start looking at it immediately. I think the Giants are in a rebuild mode right now. And if you're in a rebuild mode, you're more than likely going to suck. Meaning, hopefully, if the rebuild is going well, you have a top five pick for the next draft. Who is it that's going to be the top five quarterback selected next year? And that doesn't mean they're going to be, but I want at least an idea on who those players are and maybe some early games that I can watch to see how they may transition into an offense that the Giants might not even have in 2025 at that point.
Well, yeah, that's the end part about it. And I think it would be too soon. Like, how soon is too soon? It would be too soon for a multitude of reasons. First of all, like, the only top five I care about, Nick, when it comes to looking ahead are quarterbacks at this point. Like, if we get into a class spot where we can get Malik Nabers this year, great. I'm happy. Like, that type of player, great. I think he's a blue chip. I'm excited about the prospect of it. But, like, if they're at that point again and it's another failed season, I just want quarterback at that. I need some quarterback type hope. And that's what I'll be like looking early ahead. But I'll say this. I don't necessarily think, Robert, that the Giants are definitely going to be a team in that mix again for a multitude of reasons. Like, I think if there was going to be a year where the Giants were in the top five conversation and they were going to have a chance at one of these top talented quarterbacks, this was it. This was the year. They needed to not have those six turnovers against Washington. They needed to not have Mac Jones dump interceptions off and miss the field goal at the end. And needed to find a way to lose that second Washington game. And they would have been in. But next year, I don't know if all those breaks are going to have – it's going to be two coaches coaching, you know, it's going to be coaches and a GM coaching for their lives, right? So down the stretch when everyone's like, even if they're in the mix for one of those picks, you know, it's going to be balls to the wall, everything on the line, every player hurt is going to be playing. There probably won't be the Leonard Williams trade that Joe Shane made last year to help the team this year because it'll be like, my ass is on the line. I need to continue to try to win these games to prove to John Mara, who, you know, believes strongly in winning is the main, John Mara to him, like I've said this before, I'll say it again. And this is part of, I like John Mara as an owner, and I know I'm close to alone in that, Nick, though I know you kind of like him too. I just feel like there's so many bad owners in sports, he doesn't personally qualify for me. But one thing I don't like about him is how he views success. He views success as, if you can get a 9-win season and you can get meaningful games in MetLife Stadium at the end of a season, he would take that year after year after year after year and, you know, grind to a playoff game, have no real hope of a Super Bowl, but get to the playoffs and have those games in December in the home stadium packed in January. So, like, to him, that's success. To me, I want long-term success. I want sustainability. I want to compete and win divisions two of every 3 years, for example. And so to him, like, you know, he'll take – they don't have to – the bar is not set that high, in my opinion, for Dable and Shane to keep their jobs. They just, and so with that said, they're going to want to win every possible game down the stretch. So I actually think it might be too – like, I think it's almost the opposite. I think that they won't really be in that mix. And, you know, they had a lot of circumstances, in my opinion, that led to their poor record this year, Nick. The slew of injuries in the offensive line, like, is that going to happen every year? Probably not. Maybe, but probably not. So I think it would be too early, Robert. And I think for this – at this point, Nick, where I'm at with this is just if it happens, it happens, and they get one of these chances at a top talent quarterback at some point in our lifetime. I have only had it once in my entire lifetime, 2004. That was the only chance. That was the only time in my life where I felt like the Giants had a chance to draft a top tier talent quarterback. Cause I did not believe Daniel Jones or Dwayne Haskins were at that level. And I, you know, I'm on record of that. And you can find all the content. I felt like Kyler Murray was, Nick, and I might be wrong about that. We'll see what happens. And maybe part of that isn't the talent. It's part of the, you know, the work ethic and the processing, but I knew the Giants didn't have a chance at him that draft, right? He was going one overall. Knew it. You knew it. Even though they were at his pro day, they were spending a lot of resources there. I just knew it wasn't real. So the real only time in my life I had a chance at a top tier quarterback talent was 2004. So I'm just like, that's been so long ago, Nick. It's 19 years at this point or 20 years at this draft. Like, if it happens, it happens in my lifetime, but I'm just not going to count on it anymore.
Beraldo asks, which position is not being talked about but can be addressed with one of the second round picks? Honestly, which position might not be addressed by a second round pick, I think, is the question we should be asking. I wouldn't be shocked if the Giants went with any position, I think, with the second round pick, other than maybe like inside linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, so let's – I think I agree with you on that. I'm just trying to think. Like, inside linebacker would probably be the shocking, or this is not being talked about, can be addressed. So that one probably won't be addressed, right? No inside linebacker. I would say running back is not really being discussed much, but could be there. I'd be disappointed as hell if that was the pick. And that doesn't go for every class. I love going running back in some classes. This is just not the class for me at running back. I do not like, I keep seeing like Braylon Allen discussions for RB1. And I'm a Wisconsin fan. People claim me to be a homer with draft picks. If the Giants take Braylon Allen as a second, even a third round pick, I'll be disappointed as hell. I've seen this kid his entire career at Wisconsin. This is one of the worst backs we've had come through the draft class. Like, the fact that he's even in the mix for RB1 is not a good sign for the top of this RB class. So that one would be one that would shock me, but that would disappoint me, but it wouldn't shock me, Nick, because the Giants have a big need at that position. Another one would be safety, I think. Those are the two for me, safety and back and running back, if they let McCoy walk.
I think any position is up in the air. So I don't know which, I don't know if any of them would shock me other than inside linebacker. Because I can see the Giants, and I don't think, and I agree with you with running back. If the Giants do that, I don't think shocked is the right word. I'd be disappointed if the Giants spent.
What about safety, Nick?
I would not be disappointed if the Giants went safety. I think the safety is a need, and a lot of this still rides on what are the Giants going to do with Xavier McKinney. That is a question that we obviously don't have an answer. But say they retain Xavier McKinney and then they spent it on safety. Look, Shane Bowen, if you're drafting for Shane Bowen, and Shane Bowen really loves a safety, he loves to use three safety sets. Are the Giants right now comfortable enough with Dane Belton to be that third safety? I'm not 100% certain. And if they love somebody who is going to be out there for over 500 defensive snaps because of these three defensive personnel packages, I'm not going to sit there and throw a fit, especially if he's a good football player. And there are a lot of unique safeties in this draft class, guys who are like 6'4", like the kid from Miami, right? Like there's a lot of guys that I don't think I would throw a fit if the Giants entertained it, but it also depends on who else is on the board. And that's really what it is. There's an opportunity cost to every decision that you make. And if the Giants pass on, say, a cornerback, somebody who could start opposite of Deontay Banks, or a wide receiver, if they do not go wide receiver in the first round, maybe I'll be like, oh, well, you know, I would have liked them to maybe go in this direction, but I'm going to trust them in this situation.
I'm with you on that, because I think a lot of time people are like, they go down the board of needs, Nick, and they're like, you know, got to do this. We got to fill corner. We got to fill edge. And it's like, sometimes the best player there is nowhere close to an edge on their board from their scouting and evaluation. So don't force it. You got to take the best player. You don't want to always just take the best player. You don't want to draft a running back at two and number two overall again. Like, you don't want to go back down that bad, but you got to just, for the most part, take the best player with exception positions. One more position I'll throw out there though, Nick, that wouldn't, again, nothing would surprise or disappoint, shock me. Disappoint was the other word I would use just based on where I'm at. I would think that if they go the route of drafting a Y tight end in the second round, Nick, it wouldn't be what I love, because I don't think it says great things about their long-term view of what Bellinger can be for them. And I know me and you are on the page, the stronghold page of, we've seen this dude's tape over and over and over again. It's literally what we do on this podcast for the main core of our pod. And we just love the tape so much that we think there's 10-year potential with him at the Y position for the Giants. So I wouldn't like them. If they draft a Y tight end with that early capital, it wouldn't be the greatest thing for me.
Yeah, I actually thought about bringing up the Y tight end position, just tight end position in general. I want the Giants to draft the tight end. I just don't think I want it with one of their first three picks with this current roster. I think you just have a lot of other holes, and you could, just judging off of it, look, I don't have a full comprehensive understanding of the draft as of right now. I'm getting there. It does seem like there will be tight ends that will be available on day three that can come in, that can contribute similar to maybe a Daniel Bellinger, maybe not to the level of Daniel Bellinger in his rookie season, but maybe similar. So I would rather go that route than spend a top 60 pick on that position.
And I don't hate the idea, Nick, of, because I'm with you. We don't want to have what we had last season where, like, if Bellinger gets injured, there's nothing you can do.
We're screwed.
Yeah, you just can't do that again. And maybe that could be a day three option. But I also just think, like, in this offense, if it gets to the point, like, if everything goes right and Dable's here for the next 5 years and Shane's with him, the premier offense is like an explosive vertical offense like we saw in Buffalo. And that one really didn't feature tight ends. Like, even the one tight end they had sometimes didn't get on the field that often. So, like, it just, I know last year we saw a lot of two tight end sets, but I think that was more to do with the quarterback personally and the offensive line. Like, there's just not, you can't really let this quarterback operate like a three receiver type offense. He just doesn't get through it fast enough. So I think that had more to do with that, but I don't know how long this quarterback's going to be here.
Brian Heffy asks, my wife has been telling me that football and Big Blue Banter are the quote, other women, unquote. How do I better hide my football obsession? I am blushing right now, Brian. That is a compliment that I absolutely love. But Dan, how do you want to tackle this one?
One of the nicest things anyone's ever said to us in a mailbag, without a doubt. The fact that, hey, look, everyone in every relationship has an other woman. Sometimes it's golf for some people, you know, gambling, whatever it might be. Football is one of them for a lot of people. But the fact that Big Blue Banter is also in that is just awesome. I'm always blown away, Nick, by like some of the people who like Brian. And we've known Brian for a while now. We've just been diehard fans for a while. Like, that stick through, like, and want more of a specific one team podcast, like, four or five episodes a week, especially when that team is just god awful for so long. Like, I saw some old friends of mine this past weekend, and one of them's a diehard Giants fan, and he's like, dude, I'm so sorry, I really haven't listened to much Big Blue Banter. It's so hard for me, like, you know, after week 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it's just so hard for me. And I was like, I get that. Like, I know the level of fan you're at, and I don't want you to be someone you're not as a fan. Like, you're not the type. Like, you're a diehard fan. It doesn't make you less of a diehard fan to not listen to a diehard fan type podcast when the team is god awful and doesn't actually have any real hope in your mind. And I'm okay with that. So, but I said, when we're back and we're good again, I expect you back on, and I know you will be. It's not that I expect it and I'm hoping you will be. I know you will be. And I think that people like you, Brian, who have stuck with us through these horrific years, those are the real MVP. There it is. The Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Real
MVP. Yeah. KD. Rohan S. asks, controversial question. Daves and company.
Wait, we didn't even answer Brian's question, by the way, Nick. So let me try to think of something.
Oh, yeah, good point. So how does he better hide it? So how does he better hide his football obsession? I would say you don't need to hide your football obsession. If you're obsessed with football, I would encourage you to own it. Now, if you're being cudgeled into hiding it by your wife, that's where I don't really know if I have the best answer for you, but this is something that I've kind of dealt with as well in my own relationship. Oh, yeah. But I just kind of tell Diana, I'm like, look, like, this is kind of how it is. This is what you're getting. This is the part of the package that you're wanting to hitch your wagon to. So you're just kind of going to have to accept it. And I'm not saying that in like a, it's not like, I don't believe it overrides a relationship ever, but it's just like, hey, I'm a football guy. It's what I do. And you kind of got to accept that at that point.
Yeah. Also, you always have the best excuse, and you know, you and I will always have the best excuse in any spot. It's my job. It's work. What do you want from me? But for those who don't have that excuse, and a lot of people don't have that excuse, maybe one idea would be like you try to get your wife into football somehow, some way, and then it's like a thing you guys do together. That would be maybe my best advice for this. And then you don't even have to hide it. But anyway, Rohan asks Nick, I have a controversial question. Daves and company brought in Wink. Wink was in the NFL for a considerable amount of time. It is obvious that Wink wasn't a team player. However, what does that say about Dable that he wasn't aware of Wink's issues prior to the hire?
Interesting. I don't know if it necessarily says that Daves wasn't aware of the issue. I think he saw Wink as a very respectable and difficult defensive coordinator to go against. I think Brian Daboll has schemed against Wink Martindale throughout both of their times in the NFL, and he knew that Wink Martindale was a difficult defensive coordinator to go against. So he was hiring him based on what he can do as a defensive coordinator, not necessarily on, hey, we're going to be best friends. Because I don't know how many coaches in the NFL are like, hey, yippee skippy doo, let's go grab ice cream after practice. I don't really think it's like that. I think they all view it as a business. It just got to a boiling point because I think Wink Martindale did not like the fact that Brian Daboll was trying to put his fingerprints, rightfully so. He's the head coach of the team. He should be able to say, hey, I'm the head coach, I want you to do this. And Wink Martindale just did not respect Brian Daboll's defensive football acumen. And then it was the butting of the head. So I don't necessarily blame Brian Daboll for being unaware of Wink's issues. I think this is just kind of the natural process, the natural business of football. Is a lot of these guys have huge egos. And when you're losing football games, those egos are really going to clash. And I don't really hold that against Brian Daboll. Look, it came to a boiling point. So you can look at him and be like, you're the head coach, this is your fault. But Brian Daboll has every right as the head coach to tell or ask or try and influence Wink Martindale to do what he wants. That's how the chain of command is set up in the NFL. And to me, I don't view Brian Daboll negatively. And I don't necessarily think that he was unaware of the issues as the question lays out. That's not how I interpret it, Rohan.
Yeah. Rohan, I would say this, like, everyone puts their best foot forward in their first initial interview, right? Like, Wink Martindale's interview with Brian Daboll, I wouldn't be, surprised if he brought up some of what happened at the end of his tenure in Baltimore. It was like, look, I'm going to make these changes. This is what's going to happen. And then things change after the interview. You get into the job and there's moments that you have. Look, you know, it's tough. I don't blame Brian Daboll even for some of the things that he did trying to put his fingerprints and on the defense at points. Because guess what? Your job is on the line if your defensive coordinator is not doing a good job and your defense is not doing a good job. Not that that was the case, but in moments that you felt like you could change things for the better. And it's on you to keep your job to do it. Like, look at the Super Bowl, for example. Kyle Shanahan has to call a timeout because Steve Wilkes is playing such a soft zone at that final KC drive in overtime. And it's too late at that point. KC has moved down the field far enough, and there's not enough he can do at that point. But, like, should he have just let it keep going? Should he have let Steve Wilkes just go do whatever the hell he wants to do? And the game, I mean, it ended up anyway they lose, but it would have been a definite loss that way. No, like, that's it. I don't think the coach should just defer at all times defensive coordinator, even if that was maybe even agreed upon when they first came together. Wink and Dave. I think things can change when losing happens, like you said, Nick. So I don't really blame him for that. And I also don't blame him for not getting a good read, as Rohan might be suggesting here on Wink to begin with, because again, like, he's that first interview is going to be the best foot forward. That's how things go.
Absolutely. And look, that doesn't mean that Brian Daboll isn't a micromanager either. Like, I think Brian Daboll is a micromanager, and that's just who he is, right? Maybe you can say, hey, try to not micromanage as much, but it's easier said than done when you're losing football games and you think as a head football coach that you can do something to prevent your team from losing football games by maybe asking your defensive coordinator to, I don't know, listen to his head coach.
Yes, I completely agree with you on that one, Nick. All right. Jacob Shaduk asks, having a hard time figuring out what's going to happen this offseason. I think we all are, actually.
Yeah.
On that note, what does your ideal offseason look like?
Ooh, ideal offseason, man. I don't know if I have an ideal offseason. I think it would include re-signing Xavier McKinney. So let's start there. You can't get rid of Daniel Jones right now. I am 100% okay with the Giants trading up, but I don't know if that is the number one path for the New York Giants right now. So really, I'm kind of sitting here, Jacob, like, I don't really know what my ideal offseason is. Part of me does say this, though, or think this. If, and I'm not sure if this is the way it is right now, if the Giants are certain about one of these quarterbacks, you got to go and get them. But how much is that going to cost? I don't freaking know, right? Like, I don't have the information to really answer that question. But, man, I don't know if the Giants are going to, I think you did a good job laying this out before, Dan. I don't know if the Giants are going to suck enough to get the quarterback that they love in the future.
If there even is one in next class.
Or even if there is one. So it's like, say they do love Drake May, and one of the teams picking ahead of them doesn't, or they just want to go in another direction. You feel that process out through, you know, phone calls and the relationships you have in the league. I think you got to figure out a way to get that guy. And then go from there. Because if not, I don't know if you're going to get any more chances for specifically for Brian Daboll, but maybe even for Joe Shane.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What's going on, Big Blue Banter listeners? I'm excited for the football season for several reasons. And one of those reasons is Prize Picks, which is North America's largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform. And it's so simple to use. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including professionals, sharks, and people who are going to exploit you, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections, and you just watch the winnings roll in. It's very simple to play and gives you a little extra skin. I've set my picks in less than 60 seconds. There are so many stats to choose from, and the withdrawals of funds are easy and quick. Dan and I will be adding a segment to our show before every game where we pick our favorite stats, more or less yards or touchdowns, what have you, and we'll be discussing why from a scheme, matchup, and game theory perspective. I love their promotions and how easy their interface is to operate at Prize Picks. I may select more on tackles for a loss from Bobby Okereke or Kayvon Thibodeau next game. They also do other sports as well. It's a really cool experience. Please join Dan and I in the fun of Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. You will.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Will not regret it. Oh, my friends, you know what time it is. You're hungry, you're starving, and you desperately need pizza. You should get the best pizza on the market. And that is, of course, Little Caesars. Make Little Caesars, the official pizza sponsor of the NFL, part of your game day. Order online during the pizza pregame all day on NFL game days and even on Pro Bowl Sunday. And get ready for some football fun and cheesy delicious pizza. Choose your favorite Little Caesars pizza or pick the toppings you crave. Either way, you win. And speaking of winning, everyone scores with convenient delivery or our in-store pizza portal pickup. So grab some friends and enjoy a few slices during the game.
So this is a great question. And I think ultimately, and we've done this in the past, Nick, at some point in the next maybe 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even just 2 weeks, we should do a whole dedicated podcast to like our X step plan for the best possible offseason for the Giants, because I think that will take our, it's going to be time consuming and we're going to get into it. We're going to really do the dirt nitty gritty of it. This is more of an off the top of our head type of thing. So I want to start by saying that, but for me, off the top of my head, you're asking what an ideal offseason looks like for me, Jacob. And for me, it starts at the top at quarterback. So the first part of my ideal offseason is no more restructuring the Daniel Jones contract. Leave it as it is. Do not push back any more of the cap hit. It's going to be some dead cap hit no matter what they do next year. This year, already done for. It's all on the books. But next year, no matter what, they're taking a dead cap hit with Jones. It's going to be, I think, $21 or $23 million. I don't remember the exact number there. So you take that hit, you take your medicine, and you eat it, and you do not further restructure that contract. So that's number one. Number two for me, and look, Jacob's asking for ideal, Nick. And number two, ideal thing for me would be teams at the top. Okay, let's start it like this. Caleb Williams won overall for the Bears. That one I think is locked in stone. Number two, Washington. They take Jaden Daniels. They want that style of quarterback, right? They're asking for ideal. I'm going to give you ideal. Ideal is teams over-focus and over-fixate on the flaws of Drake May's tapes. And I tweeted about it the other day. There's some bad tape of Drake May out there. Guess what? There was a lot of bad tape of Josh Allen. And guess what? I love how Daniel Jeremiah said this last year. There's not a single perfect prospect. There's bad tape of Caleb Williams. There's bad tape of Andrew Luck. I bet if you go back and look at Stanford, you could be like, how did he not process this? How did he throw this? Look at how off target he is. Like every prospect has some bad tape. And so I hope that the ideal offseason for me is teams overfixate on Drake May's flaws and he drops to six and the Giants can naturally take him at six. That's ideal offseason for me. That's part two. The first is don't touch that Jones contract. Do not push any of that dead cap hit any further back. And then three for me, my third ideal offseason would be the Giants trade up for Drake May or Caleb Williams, one of those two quarterbacks. And whatever they have to give up, I hope it's not too much. I don't know, Nick. I don't care at this point. I just want some hope long term. Again, everyone who knows me and has listened to this podcast long enough knows that I'm not thinking about 2024. I'm never thinking about the next year. Until we get a quarterback, then I will. That I believe in, then I will. I'm thinking about the future down the road. So I want some hope at that quarterback position. That's still ideal for me, number one. Then we can get into the little nitty gritty on another pod, Nick. Re-signing McKinney and things like that. What we do with Barkley. But for now, that's ideal offseason for me. Starts at the top at quarterback. And it's one of those. It's two of those three things happening. The first one, lock in the Jones. Don't touch that contract. Then one of the next two.
Yeah, I love the way that you laid that out. And also, just hopefully throughout the spring and into training camp, we see some development from the freaking young players, man. We have to at this point. But that's a given.
Yeah, I mean, you could just talk about, like, we'll get into more of that. But, like, the offensive line, there's a lot that would be ideal there as far as development goes and with the new coaching we have there.
All right, Dan. Andrew Owens asks, seen Steph saying better to run on third and four or five than to pass, so third and short. In a way, this makes sense because combo of defense, not expecting the run, possible to get 4 or 5 yards. And then you can just, if you don't get those 4 or 5 yards, go for it on fourth and short if you don't convert. Dable doesn't seem like the guy to do this because he's pass heavy. What are your thoughts? I don't really know how many coaches do this as well. That's another thing I kind of want to add. You don't really see a ton of coaches doing this. So yeah, that's another part of this as well. But Dan, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's a good point you made there, Nick. And first of all, I want to say, like, I wouldn't lean too much on what Dable is, because again, still Mike Kafka is still the play caller for the Giants, as far as I know and as far as we know. Until that changes, I'm going to just say, well, Kafka, because you're still the guy making those decisions. I think you're right, Nick. The coaches I do tend to see do this more are the ones like the Shanahans, like the guys with successful, established run games that are consistent and that they believe in. The Giants haven't had a consistent, successful run game. Like, they had good moments in 2022. They really did, especially down the stretch. But, like, it never really felt to me like a consistent force that they can rely on game after game after game, like some of these best run games in the NFL have been over the years. But to your general observation, I'm with you, Andrew. I love the idea of throwing on second and short, running on third and short, you know, basically because of what you said, do what the defense is not expecting. And especially if you're the type of team, and we've talked about this in the past, Nick, that is very good at disguising your plays, like making your runs look like passes and making your passes look like runs. I think there's even more value to those teams that are good at that. And some coordinators are better than others. I felt like the Giants did a good job of this, really good job in 2022 at times. Not so great of a job of this in 2023. That would be one of my criticisms of the coaching staff. And I think there's factors for that. Like, do you trust your offensive line? Maybe you don't. But I think generally speaking, we might see more of this, Andrew. And we might not see this lean that you maybe have seen or think we're seeing from Dable when the personnel changes and when the run game is established in a certain way. And we're hoping that the new offensive line coach can do that. Like, we're hoping Brasillo can bring that in.
I'm really hoping that as well. Look, I'm thinking of the Ravens and the San Francisco 49ers are the two teams with that type of rushing attack. And the Ravens are unique because they have Lamar Jackson. The San Francisco 49ers have the best rushing attack in the league. The Giants, like, how many times did we see Saquon Barkley get the ball and then get met in the backfield? And if he got back to the line of scrimmage, we're like, wow, that's really talented on Saquon Barkley's part for getting back to the line of scrimmage. Like, that happens too frequently for the Giants. I don't want to lay that at the feet of Dable when that's such a reality that is so palpable whenever you turn on a Giants game.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that because you're right about that. All right, Nick, let's do one more and then we'll get to the rest of them on different parts of the mailbag. We may do these over the week, but we're just know, and there were a ton of questions. Everyone whose question was asked for this one will get answered, just might not be on this part. So last question for this one, Nick, and we're going to get from our buddy J. Dodge 80, another longtime listener. Thank you so much. He says, and this is a good question. He says, across successful NFL teams, what position do most of the explosive plays come from? Is it a wide receiver one, wide receiver two, RB1? Oh, if a wide receiver one if you're a wide receiver one, can you make up the difference with two wide receiver twos, for example, and a good but not great running back one? Or are teams with a wide receiver one dominant versus other groups, versus a group that doesn't have wide receiver twos? How does the O-line compare in all this? What are your thoughts on this, Nick?
I love this question, and I have no data in front of me, so I'm just going off the top of my head. I think the number one reason why an offense creates explosive plays is going to come down to the quarterback. Who is the quarterback? Now, I think the play caller is a close second too. I think play caller and quarterbacks are married into that. And I also think the offensive line has some impact. But regarding who is the recipient of the explosive play, I think a lot of that depends on how the defense is playing a specific offense, who the quarterback is, and the rapport that he has with a certain wide receiver or whatever. But, like, if I had to pick one, I guess wide receiver one would probably be it, right? But in some offenses, like we were talking about before, like San Francisco 49ers, who hyper-target their running back because it's freaking Christian McCaffrey and they have an elite rushing attack, it's going to be Christian McCaffrey. So a lot of it is really just context-dependent on the overall situation that a team has. But I'll say this, if you want to create explosive plays, your best way to improve that as an offense is just find a quarterback who looks down the football field and can unlock, as we say on this podcast, every inch of the football field and actually utilize every inch of the football field.
This is a great question. And I thought Nick had the best answer. I think, you know, not everyone, by the way, agrees with what Nick and I's take is on this. And I know that for a fact. So I'm not even saying that we're definitely right. I just know that we're very aligned on this, Nick. And it really does, like, I'm going to talk and answer your question after about the positions you're out there. But for me, it's quarterback by far and away one. And the reason I believe this is what Nick said, it's mostly, are you processing the space downfield? Because if you are and you're a great quarterback, you're throwing it into space, you're leading the ball with anticipation, and there's wide receivers have a baseline of having talented athleticism. Like, just look at C.J. Stroud, for example, this year. I think there's many examples. It's just the first one that comes to mind, and it's one that's just so perfect because it happened this past year. He lost Nico Collins at one point. Then Tank Dell became that explosive guy. He lost Tank Dell at one point while Nico was out. Then Noah Brown had two games. Brown from the Cowboys had like 200-yard receiving games. You know, those are explosive plays that were happening with Noah Brown out of nowhere because the quarterback sees the field well post-snap, processes the information. It doesn't take him 5 seconds. He's not getting like the greatest protection in the world. He's just getting the ball out fast into space and putting the ball in the right spots for the receivers to get the ball and do things with after the catch. And that's explosive plays. Sometimes the ball is just hitting them in the hands 40 yards down the field. Another explosive play. So it starts there, and then it goes to the second part where Nick and I are very also in lockstep that play caller is the second most important thing. I think the best example of that is Ben Johnson. I don't think any of us really think Jared Goff is an explosive quarter throw play quarterback. And I don't really think that, in my personal opinion, Ross St. Brown would be anywhere near as good if he were drafted by any other NFL team. That's my stance on this, Nick. I think he has skill set that's interesting and great. And like he doesn't drop a lot of passes. He's explosive in and out of his breaks to an extent. But like if he didn't have Ben Johnson, I'm not so sure his career would be. I'm actually sure that I don't think his career would be anywhere near where it's at for Amon-Ra St. Brown.
I think we disagree there.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah.
I'm not saying that your point is invalid. I still think Amon-Ra St. Brown is a very talented wide receiver. And in his rookie season, if I'm not mistaken, did he have Ben Johnson? Because
that's a good point. I feel like he was there, but he might not have been.
Regardless of even if Ben Johnson wasn't there, like to me, Amon-Ra St. Brown is underrated. It sounds weird because he's revered now. He's respected around the league, and I still kind of somewhat think he is underrated just because he's like a smaller guy who is just always open. He has that type of talent, and when you watch him run routes, he's one of those players that we talk about on this podcast that just disguises his routes so well and understands timing and space and how to manipulate space so well to maximize throwing windows for his quarterbacks. Like I love Amon-Ra, but I'm also like one of his biggest fans. So I'm probably overselling him a bit.
No, I don't think you're overselling. Like I also love Amon-Ra too, because I like that style of receiver. And I think that's most important. Like I think it's better than having those like raw traits, like speed and all the things that maybe he doesn't have. So I generally do like, I just think maybe some of the explosive, that's it. My point wasn't really about him as a receiver, just some of the explosive plays I watch when I watch Lions tape, I feel like they were really well designed and just got him in a position where like, yes, it's him, but it's also like, damn, that space that Ben Johnson found him like led to the 20 plus there.
I'm so glad that you brought up the Lions for Jay Dodge 80's question too, because they don't have that elite quarterback that you think of with Jared Goff, but they have the play caller and then they have the offensive line and then they have the wide receiver one. So like that's the Lions are probably one of the more interesting teams in the NFL pertaining to this question specifically.
Yes. And that gets me a third point, because those are the two big ones and we're locked up in that. We're locked up in the third too, though. Like for us, and I know people disagree with us, we'll take the line any day, every day of the week, 1,000 times over 1,000 over the wide receiver one, over the RB one, over the wide receiver two, over having like a good one, two, and three at wide receiver and a tight end. We just like, so I don't want to discredit the line. I want to make it clear. Nick and I believe in line over skill players by a margin. Cause I know people sometimes hear a quarterback discussion and think what means we hate the line. We don't hate the line. We know the line is important. We just think the quarterback is more important than the line in a lot of ways. It's not that we think that, we know that. And a lot of NFL team, every NFL team would agree with you on us on that. But I want to make it clear, those are the big three for me. So just to get to the next point, after we tackle those three, it's really going down the line far, but I would then agree with you, Nick, wide receiver one. But I will say this, when you have an offense that, and it's rare, we've seen only rare in NFL history, but when you have an offense that has like the Gronk Hernandez, like you can locate a great Y tight end and a great move tight end, like you then to me, like that could lead to a lot of explosive plays. It did with the Patriots, and it leads to just such an advantage from a schematic standpoint. I know Kyle Shanahan's talked a lot about that, not with two great tight ends, but with a Juszczyk at fullback and then also a Kittle, a fullback and a tight end. So I think that's another interesting route to go if you can find it. It's just so much harder to find because the bust rate at tight end is just so much higher than other positions.
Yeah, especially when you have someone like Juszczyk, a fullback, someone who can align in this 21 personnel looks. Look, like not every defense is equipped to play efficiently and effectively against a team like that. Now they're starting to come around a little bit more, but when the fullback was phased out over the last like 10 years, you didn't see every defense have the right linebackers to really play that. Cause remember the NFL, if you go back like 6-7 years, the NFL kind of went to that time where like linebackers were like 220 pounds.
Yeah.
Right. And then when you come out there in 21 personnel with Kyle Juszczyk, and you can align Kyle Juszczyk outside the numbers and he can run routes effectively, but you can also align, he's going to punch you right in the mouth. Like that gives the offense a mismatch weapon, and the defense have to find a way to counter that. And they did that by either beefing up the linebackers a little bit more or incorporating three safety looks and getting these hybrid safeties out there. So just kind of not every defense had the ability to really play those teams. And I just think the sure. more versatile your offense is, the better. And teams that seem to have this Kyle Shanahan flavor to them seem to have those types of fullbacks who can operate as tight ends and can also operate outside the numbers. You just do so many different like creative, cool things with them.
Yeah, agreed on that. All right, that's all the time we have for part one of the mailbag. We're trying to try to keep these more concise and just do them in more parts for those who have told us, you know, you want to listen to, have a time block where you want to listen to our show. So we're going to do that. We're going to wrap up there. Thanks so much for tuning in. If your question wasn't answered, rest assured it will be answered on the next part or the part after that. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.